Of Mornings for the Master. Here it is Wednesday, the middle of the week, and we have a great opportunity to study with you today from 1 Samuel, the end of 1 Samuel, so we'll be closing this book out today, so I hope you got your copy of God's Word with you, and we'll have a chance to get into that here in a moment. My name is Chip Horton. With us today is Richard Rutledge. He's your regular host on Monday mornings. And so we're glad to have you with us today. We're glad that you have made the Gospel Radio Network part of your day. We have people that normally listen, and we're so tickled to have you with us on a regular basis as well. Richard's got the chat window open here this morning, so if you have an opportunity to chime in, even just stop in and say hello, we'd be glad to have you utilize that piece of our network. And let us know that you're out there. That's a wonderful blessing as well. But before we get started, we always try to make mention of a few things that are going on around us, and even right here locally. So what do we got going on, Mr. Richard?
Well, we have a gospel meeting that is continuing at the Bangs congregation there in Bangs, Texas. Ronnie Haynes has come down to conduct this meeting. The theme of the meeting has been Matters That Matter, and it will conclude tonight with Are You Ready? Now, if you need information or directions, give them a call, 325-642-2102.
Also, we had Mike Bonner and Carl McCann here yesterday in the building for a little while with the preacher's meeting, and Mike is in town. And he is down there at the Fruitvale Church of Christ conducting a meeting that goes on even till tonight. He's been talking about the light of evangelism. So if it is the case that you're not going to your home congregation tonight for one reason or another, you might have the opportunity to go hear Mike tonight as he finishes out at 7:30 there in Fruitvale on soul winning as a result of the light.
And then at the Broadway congregation in Tyler, Jim Law will conclude their meeting, I Can Trust My Bible. And so that will begin at 7 p.m. tonight. Also with this meeting, if you notice on the homepage as you logged on to the Gospel Radio Network, you would have seen that there is a special link button so that you can listen in live if you were unable to get out this evening. You want to listen to the conclusion of this meeting. It will be at 7 p.m. Click on that Listen Live button. If you need information or questions about the meeting, call 903-561-9560.
And like last year, will he be archiving that? Do you know? Will that be available later? Or
I haven't spoken to Ryan about that.
We don't know that yet. I remember last year I went back and listened to it several times, so that was a great blessing. So maybe that'll happen again this year. Also remember that our meeting is winding up tonight with Kerry Clark. He's done an incredible job. Really liked Monday night. He talked about God's Word is like fire, and he talked about the aspects of fire. It's comforting. It gives light. Even it destroys. He did a great job with Matthew 24 last night. Really went through a full exegesis of that particular passage and the ways that it's misunderstood by so many religious type folks. And then tonight he's going to talk about the devil's trot line. And so as he wraps up tonight, we'll have a great opportunity to hear that. And so we ask you to remember us as we finish that up, as we reach out in our community. And certainly we're grateful for Kerry coming our way and doing such a great job with that, the Unstoppable Church of Jesus the Christ.
Oh, and also with that one, you may have noticed that there is also another special link on the homepage. So if, again, you're unable to get out this evening, you want to listen in, click on that. You'll be able to hear Kerry tonight as he brings the lesson. You'll hear it live. Lessons or the devil's trot line is what the topic is tonight. And as if you, that is the case, that you're sitting there listening on the Gospel Radio Network as he presents this lesson, I want you to picture in your mind a trot line strung across the building up there, and Kerry's going to be baiting it the way that the devil would. So look forward to that lesson tonight. Then I'll start a meeting Sunday at the Westside Congregation in Ida Belle, Oklahoma. The theme of this meeting is going to be lessons in lyrics, sermons from the songs that we sing. And so that'll be April the 9th through Friday, April the 14th. All right.
And also coming up right around the corner is the 31st. Get that 31st annual Maybach Lectures. That starts on the 21st of April, runs through the 23rd. The 20th, they have a, they have a 20th annual youth night. So that's a big event to be a part of. I've heard some of our folks talking about that. I guess it's a fantastic event. So be aware that that's coming up at the Maybank Church of Christ down in Maybank, Texas. You can get in touch with them at maybankchurchofchrist.org and find out more about this particular event. Again, that's April 21st through the 23rd.
And then also at that same period of time, April 22nd and 23rd, the annual Love Lady Lectures will take place. This is at the Love Lady Congregation. And their theme, once again, this is the fourth year that they've run with these this theme, Lessons in Lyrics. And they're, again, going to be taking a look at the songs and going through those. They've been, in the past, the lessons have been outstanding. I know that you'll benefit from that. This will be recorded and available later on Tolstar for you to be able to get copies of. But if you can make it down there, or if you have any questions, give them a call, 936-636-7659.
Lots going on. And the flyers just continue to come in, so this is a great time of year. Spring has sprung, and the meetings are going going well. So plenty of opportunities for you to continue to be edified and grow on a daily basis in various congregations of the Lord's Church. Well, as we have the opportunity this morning, we will finish out the book of 1 Samuel and then hand over the second book even to our brother Chris, if the Lord wills, tomorrow morning as he fires up the account of 2 Samuel. So that's a great study in and of itself. And so we've seen yesterday, we saw, quite a bit going on. Ryan reached back a little bit and did some review work to bring us up to the present text that we found ourselves in. We heard about the death of Samuel. We heard about the death of the evil Nabal. We saw David take Abigail to wife. We saw a lot going on yesterday. And we also saw that particular event in chapter 24 where David had the opportunity to slay Saul. And we saw a few great lessons being learned. Ryan did a great job with that and pointing out how big David was and how small Saul really was. And Saul would come to realize that David was, in fact, a better man. And so we saw that going on, that conversation going on in chapter 24. And even the idea that Saul was, going to repent and not continue to go after David. And so you think at that particular moment in time that Saul's done with this chasing of David. You remember, I think it was back in chapter 18 where he was so unleashed in his anger as the people sang how much better David was. You know, Saul had killed his thousands and David his tens of thousands. And so, you kind of came to a point yesterday as you were reading through that with us that he was done with this type of an attitude. But lo and behold, after we see about Abigail and Nabal, we come into chapter 26, and here it is again. Saul is still pursuing after David. And so, Richard, I thought about 2 Corinthians 7 and verse number 10, where it talks about the difference in worldly sorrow and godly sorrow, and it seems to me, if I haven't read too much into that, that we saw a lot of worldly sorrow, even in Saul, because this emotional outcry that he would have even there at the cave seems to be pretty short-lived. And so it seems to me that he's just sorry that he got caught. You know, he was embarrassed, even in front of his men, as David would come out behind him in chapter 24 and holler out and say, "Look, I've got your skirt in my hand. I could have killed you." So anyway, here we have the opportunity in chapter 26 to be introduced to these Ziphites. It looked like they are pretty well playing their hand. Being aware, you might remember back in chapter 22 where Saul went through and killed all the priests in Nob, the priests of the Lord, the Bible says. And Saul destroyed those individuals. and made havoc. And so here the Ziphites, probably scared to death of what Saul might do to them if they had concealed information about David, they run out and start to give Saul this information. We think we know where David is. And so as the chapter opens today, we've got Saul going down looking for David again. And as we come into this particular text, I want us to kind of look at this, I don't know, maybe even to some degree comical event that takes place with Abner being embarrassed. And so let's take an opportunity to kind of kick off this study this morning and read verses 5 through 12 here in 1 Samuel 26 and see this event that unfolds in front of us here again as David shows himself to be the bigger man. So read with us verses 5 through 12.
So David arose and came to the place where Saul was encamped. And David saw the place where Saul lay, and Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of his army. Now Saul lay within the camp with the people encamped around him. Then David answered and said to Ahimelech the Hittite and Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, brother of Joab, saying, "Who will go down with me to Saul in the camp?" And Abishai said, "I will go down with you." And David said to Abishai, "Come." So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and there Saul lay sleeping within the camp, with his spear struck into the ground by his head. And Abner and the people lay all around him. And Abishai said to David, "God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day. Now, therefore, please let me strike him at once with a spear right to the earth, and I will not have to strike him a second time." And David said to Abishai, "Do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" David said furthermore, "As the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall go out to battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But please, take now the spear and the jug of water that are by his head, and let us go." And so David took the spear and the jug of water by Saul's head, and they got away, and no man saw it, or knew it, or awoke. For they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen upon them.
All right, so here we see the providence of the Lord coming into play. And this is another event. It's almost a replay, you know, even in my mind, of chapter 24, where they're already in the cave. And it is a case that Saul comes in and, you know, is privately touched, as you will, by David. Well, here, it's interesting that as you look at this idea of Saul being down in the trench, it seems to me it's almost the idea as he's encircled by the wagons, by the carriages, by the men that are all around him. So he's in the middle, and so notice what David does. He goes all the way through these men. He goes all the way into the middle of the camp, and he takes these things that are right there at Saul's head. And then would go back out and not even be seen, as Richard ended there, because a deep sleep had fallen on them by the Lord's intervention. So here, just like taking the piece of Saul's skirt, it is the case he's gone in now, and he's taken this spear and this jug of water right from next to his head and walked out unscathed, hadn't even been touched. And so these individuals have the opportunity, again, to, I thought about JL, you know, had the opportunity to put him, I mean, nail him right to the ground, you know. And that was the intent even of Abishai here. You know, Abishai is mentioned several times in Scripture as a mighty warrior. And so we understand who he is and what he's capable of. And remember, Ryan mentioned yesterday the people that were joined unto David that, you know, really didn't like Saul at all, and they in the cave were saying, "Hey, let's kill the guy." They were all about getting rid of him, and so here it is that, again, David points out, "I will not touch the anointed of the Lord. I will not do this thing." And so he proves himself to be the bigger man again. And so we're called to reflect on passages that may have even been referenced yesterday, like Proverbs 25 and 22, which Paul would even reference, you know, in Romans chapter 12, about heaping coals of fire on another's head, you know, overcome evil with good. And so it is the case that he walks in, he takes this right out of the middle of the camp, has the opportunity to even touch Saul if he wanted to. He was that close. And then he walked right out. But then on the other side of this passage, as you come into verse number 13, we really start to see this scene play out before us. This individual, Abner, is called out. You know, even Saul's bodyguard, this warrior who is Abner, this person is called out even by David and you know, to be made fun of, really, in the presence of all these other warriors. And so as that particular passage opens up, he calls out from the other side of the hill and wakes them up and causes them to realize what had just taken place. And you know, we see this come up again with Saul realizing what had taken place and realizing that, in fact, he could have been killed again by David. And so here it is, this reckoning again. You get down to verse number 25, and Saul says, "I have sinned." He says, "I have played the fool. I have erred exceedingly." You know, and here we have the much of the same emotional reaction that you saw back in chapter number 24, and realizing that, again, this one that he has been running around all over the country trying to find, as David would point out in several occasions, like a flea or even a dead dog. He said, "This flea or this dead dog has come upon you again and had the opportunity to kill you, but has not touched you because you are the anointed of the Lord." And so here we see Saul again with this particular, this mindset, this emotional plea. And even here where he says that he had sinned. And so then he tells David, he says, "Look, I'm done with this." He said, "You come back into my employ. You come back into the safety of the king." And wisely, David did not trust him. And so David would go out from the camp and would go on, and we'll find out more as this particular study continues. But notice that, again, it's interesting to me that David shows himself to be the bigger man. You know, there's a lot of that in the Bible, Richard. I thought back to, I think when you studied with us in Genesis 13, the opportunity where Abraham showed himself to be the bigger man. You know, he would surrender what privileges and authority that was rightly his when he told Lot, you know, "You go left and I'll go right," or "I'll go left and you go right." But he says, "We be brethren." And so I see a lot of that even in David here. He says, "Look, I'm not going to touch you, even though I could have several times." And so we're seeing this play out, and we're beginning to learn more and more about David as the text rolls on. And we're coming to really become endeared to David because of what he is doing here. And so Saul's life had been highly esteemed, even though, as the text plays out before us, God's going to let go of Saul. You know, God is going to place his trust and his admonition in David as the next ruler. And Saul's going to come to realize that. And so as David leaves out, not taking the opportunity that Saul would give him, coming into chapter 24, he goes into a foreign land. So notice that even this evil one, this king of Israel, has forced him into a land that was not theirs. It was to be taken by them, right? It was to be taken by them, even as they came across the Jordan many, many chapters ago in our study. But here he would go outside of their particular realm and live in this place that we're going to come to find out is Ziklag. And so as David comes forward in chapter 24, we see him going into this Philistine land. And he's going to come and meet with Achish, the king over here, and come to make a relationship with him. And so we're going to see that he is going into this area and going to take this area for his own, actually be given it by Achish. And that's what we see playing out in verse number 5, even as we're still at the top of chapter 27. So Achish gave him Ziklag that day, verse number 6. And we have this opportunity to see David setting up shop, as it were, with his two wives that he's got with him. And the men that are with him and their families, they're setting up shop. They're setting up households. And so this is, even as you see in verse number 6, that which pertaineth unto the kings of Judah unto this day. Even at the writing of this particular historical event, this was something that even would be part of the Judah inheritance. So Achish gives this land to Ziklag unto David, and David begins to set up. And it was from here, as you get past verse number 8, it was from here that they would go out and attack the nations around them, right? You remember that God says when you go into the land, you would utterly destroy them. You would take their fields. You would take all as your own inheritance. You would have fields that were producing fruits and vegetables that you had never plowed. Vineyards would be yours to enjoy that you had never planted. They were to tear down the idols and the groves and all. And so here, David is really even continuing in that force. And so the Geshurites, the Gezrites, the Amalekites, those nations that were of old, verse number 8, right? Those nations that were of old of the inhabitants of the land. These are the ones that David would go out and attack. Now, it's interesting that when he has the opportunity to come back, he's going to be able to talk to Achish, and Achish is going to ask him, "Hey, where you been? What have you been doing?" And he caused Achish to believe that he had been assaulting his own people, that he had gone into Israel to tear down. And Achish, verse 12, believed David, saying, "He hath made his people Israel utterly to abhor him, therefore he shall be my servant forever." Achish thinks, well, I've got this one in the bag. And he said, "I have secured this mighty one to my side." You know, we did that when we played flag football years ago as kids. You know, we got the biggest, baddest kid and secured him on our side. It doesn't mean that we were still unable to be beat. But you have this sense of security that you have within yourselves, and that's where Achish is right now. He knows, even as he has believed this fabrication, that he has got David on his side, this mighty warrior and all of his men that have come with him and their families that have set up shop here in Ziklag. And so we continue to see what's going on with David and that which is going on even in this land where he now dwells. And as we come out into chapter number 28, we find out that David, as Brother Kate said, has got his tail up in a crack. He has backed himself into a corner because now it is the case that the Philistines are going to go out against Israel. And David's going to be expected to go with them and fight against his own people. Now what are you going to do, David? And so, again, we see David acting wisely, doing that which is going to be really a great plan. The way it works out in the end, he is certainly blessed to not have to go out against his own people. And so we particularly see that in those days, right, the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight against Israel in verse number 1 of chapter 28. And Achish said unto David, "Know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to battle." Uh-oh. "Thou and thy men." So I want all of your army. I want all of your men to come and join forces with me to go back and fight, in his mind, again against Israel, because he thought that that's what David had done already. And and so here we have this situation coming up, and we're going to see that in verses 3 and following that Saul's going to be shaking in his boots. Here is the beginning of the end, if you will, if we hadn't already seen a portion of that already. And so let's just take a moment and we'll read. Let's read verses 3 to 6 as we see Saul's thought of the Philistines coming out against him.
And before we even do verse 2, I like David's response here, okay? You know, David is in a situation. He's over in the land of the Philistines. He's living there. You know, we got this confederacy that's going to battle. It's one, you know, Achish is one of these five, you know, kings that are going to against them. They're not going to like David here in a minute being behind them, especially. But, you know, so they're going to want him to send back to Ziklag. But, you know, David is hiding out still over in this land, in the land of the enemies that should have been driven out long ago. I mean, remember in the book of Joshua chapter 13, it tells us that these Philistines still remain. They couldn't drive them out. They would continually be a thorn in the side of Israel through the time of the book of Judges and Judges chapter 3. God allowed them to stay in the land to prove Israel. And so, you know, there would be times where they would suppress them, push them back, but then here they come again. And, and so here they are, and this is the place where he's now hiding out from Saul. And again, Achish is thinking, I've got this man. And he tells him he's going to go to battle. And notice what he says. He's sort of, you know, veiled in his response here. Surely you shall know what your servant can do. you're gonna find out what I am capable of. He's not saying, you know, I'm going to fight against God's anointed. Again, he didn't take his life, so therefore he's not going to fight against in that way. But he sort of just answers it in the way, okay, you'll see what I'm capable of doing.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, chapter 3, then. Now Samuel had died, and all of Israel had lamented him, lamented for him, and buried him in Ramah in his own city. And Saul had put the mediums and the spiritists out of the land. And then the Philistines gathered together and came and encamped in Shuan. And so Saul gathered all Israel together, and they encamped at Gilboa. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by the Urim, or by the prophets.
So here is a scary moment. Calling upon the Lord, and the Lord answers not. You know, Richard, there is a way that we can cut ourselves off from the Lord answering us, isn't there?
And that's exactly right. And that's what we see with him. You know, that Isaiah 59 points that out. You know, that God can hear and God can help. But what breaks the link is the fact of sin. And Saul has done this. He has gone against the will of God. And now the point is seen that he will not.
Absolutely.
Give revelation.
So we understand, even by watching what is unfolded in front of us, you know, it's absolutely believable that he could have continued, if you will, walking in the light as he is in the light, if he would have done those things that were pleasing before God. But he had, even in his own words, he had sinned. He had done those things that were not acceptable. You remember chapters ago where Samuel would come to him and say, do I hear sheep in the background? He said, you have not done what God expected you to do.
And that's that point where it really began. You know, when he didn't, you know, God, you know, 1 Samuel 15:22, he reminds him that God requires obedience more than sacrifice.
Right.
And the next chapter, because of those preceding events and things that were going on, 1 Samuel 16:14, but the spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. And so, you know, there was this disconnect that took place all the way back in chapter 16. And so now he's calling upon the Lord, and, you know, he's picked up a line that's not connected.
That's right. And you know, wouldn't want to read too much into that, but, you know, so many times in our lives, isn't it the case that we don't reach out to God except that we're in a horrible position? We should be reaching out to God every single moment of every single day, rejoicing and, you know, thanking for the answered prayers, talking about the good times and the bad times. And here it is that he's waited till he was shaking in his boots when he's backed into a corner, when he's scared to death of the Philistine army, and he calls out, and there is no answer. So, with what Richard read a moment ago, notice that all the enchanters and the witches and all these individuals, they had been cast out by Saul. They had been destroyed. And so notice that he goes now, even continuing beyond verse 7, to one of those individuals. And he has to disguise himself. He doesn't want to be found out. He knows that certainly if this individual knows who he is, then it's not going to play out like he wants it to play out. And so he comes to this witch. We mentioned this particular event in our class recently in the Exodus, as the magicians would have that witch of Endor moment, you know, when they realized, hey, this is the finger of God. This is something that is real. This is not something that we can produce even by means of sorcery. And so here's this particular scene playing out in front of us where he goes to this witch of Endor, and he wants to have this spirit of Samuel brought up. And he waits until the very last second to tell who it is that he wants to be brought up. And so now notice that he can't talk to God. God is not answering him. And so he says, well, I'll talk to somebody that's righteous that actually has an open line to God. Well, that's not the way it works. But we're going to see play out here that actually he will be able to converse with Samuel and be rebuked. We'll see this moment in time where the witch just comes completely undone and said, you know, what is going on here? I've got a lot of questions about this one particular event. I'm telling you, I would have loved to be that fly on the wall. But Samuel had rebuked Saul's actions as sinful while he was here on earth. Now he is gone. He has passed over into paradise, and he continues to oppose Saul's sinful conduct. He continues to tell the truth. And so isn't that the way the truth is, Richard? You tell it in the good times, you tell it in the bad times. It is the truth that's going to set us free, and it is the truth that Samuel is going to continue to give even to Saul here in this particular moment of time. And so we have this conversation that is recorded to us here, beginning at even verse number 15, and he says, why have you disquieted me to bring me up? You know, why have you bothered me? You have been cut off. And so we see that playing out before us. And, you know, even as Carrie mentioned the other day, if you believe that God doesn't have a sense of humor, then you're looking at the wrong God, because the God that we know certainly would cause us to even smile in a passage like this. As this plays out, I can't even imagine what the witch's face would have looked like. I can't imagine, you know, the things that play out between Samuel and Saul here. I love this particular historical account. And verse 16, the Lord is departed from thee and is become thine enemy. Now, if that doesn't cause you to shake in your boots, he was scared of the Philistines. But friends, when God has become your enemy, you have reached the end of your line, and you need to do like that prodigal back in Luke 15, and you need to come to yourself, and you need to get up, and you need to repent, because you don't want God as your enemy. You want to hear in the last day, well done, as opposed to thy slothful and lazy servants. And so here it is that he's got double bad news. Not only are the Philistines against him, and he is scared to death of them, but now God is against him too. And so what a scary thought to even consider making God your enemy. And so as the passage continues into verses 19 and 20, verse 20 says that Saul fell straightway all along the earth and was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel, and there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no bread all the day nor all the night. Now, this is a man that is greatly perplexed. Here's a man that is at the end of his rope. God's not answering. him, he's received double bad news, and he is wiped out. He is done. Physically, he is done. Facing battle with the Philistines, and physically, he is wiped out.
You know, and Samuel tells him, again, he tells him why. You know, why did you come after me, or even seek me? Because the Lord has departed from you and has become your enemy. And he tells him why. He says, because it's happened just as I told you, that the kingdom's rent away from you because you did not execute his fierce wrath upon Amalek.
Mm-hmm.
Back to that, you know, where he brought the spoils back. There's the root cause of when it all started, when this prophecy took place. He's going to rent it from you. But then the thing is, he says, you know what's going to happen tomorrow? The Philistine is going to whip y'all. He's going to whip all of y'all. But you and your boys are going to die. You know, he tells him that tomorrow, this is that thou fool moment of
Absolutely.
Luke chapter 12.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thou fool, your soul shall be required of you. Then who are these going to be?
Yeah.
And so he has that moment where he's told that you and your sons will be with me tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a similar words of, you know, Jesus gives the thief on the cross. His were words of comfort, you know. Surely you shall be with me in paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Here he points out tomorrow, you will be with me in the Hadean realm.
Right. Absolutely. And so, you know, I kind of reflected for a moment when I was reading this yesterday, and I thought about Moses. You know, Moses was told that he was going to see his death. He was not going to go into, you know, the promised land. And God would bury Moses in a secret place and all that that goes along with that particular passage. But I just, you know, there's things that we just don't know. We don't know when the coming of the Lord is going to be. We talked about that last night, even from Matthew 24. And we don't know when the day of our death is going to be. But in passages like this where you see tomorrow you're done and your sons are done, what a sinking feeling that we're seeing coming over even Saul. So even as the passage continues to, excuse me, to its end, the witch of Endor, she takes up here in this particular event and feeds him and brings him back to a physical strength where he can go out and take care of that which is in front of him. And then as we come into chapter 29, we come back to this event where the Philistines, even the king, is saying, look, you're going to war with us. Well, as Richard mentioned, you know, these individuals that would all gather down on the floor to war, they see David and his men behind them. They're like, uh-uh, no, because you know when we get into the heat of battle, these Israelites are going to turn on us and slay us. We will not have this mighty man of valor behind us and fighting even amongst us. That's not going to work.
I like, you know, they know David because
sure.
Verse 5, is this not David of whom they sang to one another in dances, saying, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. They know who David is. I mean,
yeah.
Remember, you know, we looked at the other day, you know, here's David. Everybody loved David, you know, except for Saul. And they're singing his praises and saying everything about him. Even the enemies now know. You know, they are full aware of who he is and what he's accomplished.
And, you know, these words would, you know, they didn't have, you know, telephones and things of that nature. But notice how the word travels. You remember, even looking back some piece in our study, remember how Rahab even heard about what the Israelites had accomplished, and they were scared to death, you know. They had fainted. Even there. So they knew about Gideon and his 300 men, and certainly they knew the power that David had, even with his 600 men. And so, you know, just the fact of numbers has nothing to do. They knew who David was and what he could accomplish, even as he maskingly told the king a few minutes ago, you'll see what I'm capable of. And so David is going to leave their camp. He's going to go back to Ziklag. He's going to take this travel back up. And certainly that was a good thing because he did not want to go against his own people. That would have been a horrible thing to even consider. And so we see this playing out in front of us. So he goes back into Ziklag. He takes back to he comes back to the house, as it were, back home from the camp where they traveled, and Ziklag has been destroyed. Imagine, you know, now this feeling. And, you know, I thought about the smoke ascending. You think about that march that may have very well turned into a run, you know, thinking that our families have been destroyed. You know, I thought about Abraham as he would rise up that one morning and see the smoke rising up from Sodom. But nevertheless, you see this running, if you'll allow me that liberty, back into the city and coming to find out, hey, everybody's gone. The Amalekites have now taken their wives and their children. They have taken these weak individuals away to be slaves. And if you've read enough history, you'll notice, you know, what happened to Joseph? He was sold into slavery. You know, there was a slave trade going on, even at this particular time. You know, and so maybe David's thinking that our wives and our kids, you know, they've been sold into slavery. They're going to be sold into slavery. And so, anyway, whatever may have been going across their minds at this particular time, these men are crazy upset at David now. Look what has happened. And so as the chapter progresses, you're going to see them going out. They said, we have got to go and get these guys. Because as the manner is, these armies would go a particular distance, a day or two or three travel, and then they would sit down and they would party, if you will. They would get out their spoils and revel in their victory and drink and who knows whatever else they would have this opportunity to do. And so David says, we're going to find them, and we're going to break that party up. Well, in the process, they come across this Egyptian slave, as you see verse 11, beginning in chapter 30. And the slave makes a deal with them. And you might just notice, as a side note, that the Egyptian slave had been thrown out like a piece of garbage because he got sick. And so the Amalekites had just dropped him off. Kind of reminds you of the account of the Good Samaritan that Jesus would tell us. You know, some of you that just don't care, but then the Samaritan will come along. Well, here's David, that wonderful, godly individual, man after God's own heart, that would take care of him, take him in. Now, the Egyptian made a deal. You know, I'll show you if, you know, you don't do me no harm. But we see this playing out as the chapter continues. He finds the Amalekites. The men take back their wives and their kids. They take back all of their spoil and then some. They completely and utterly destroy these Amalekites and bring all of this stuff back into Ziklag. And then as the chapter continues, again, notice the character of David. Now, the men around him, remember Ryan mentioned yesterday the ugliness of these people that had brought themselves to be with David, you know, those that were poor, those that were not well-to-do, those that hated Saul, etc. And these individuals, they seem like they may have had a little aching in them, you know, may have had a little bit of covetousness in them. Because David says, you know what we need to do? There was 200 individuals that were so overcome by this loss in Ziklag, they stayed behind to protect what was left there in that particular realm. And so he went out with his 400 men, took care of this great slaughter, came back, and wanted to give the spoils, even dividing it evenly, including these 200 men. And the other individuals didn't want to have that. The other soldiers said, they didn't go out with us. And so notice the good and honest character of David. And then notice, even as the spoil is passed around, notice as the chapter ends, notice those that are mentioned that enjoyed the spoils of his victory as well. And so all these places that are mentioned, as verses 27 to 31 show us, are included in this victory of David. Again, goes to the character of David, doesn't it? David is a good and honest individual. Now, he's going to make some mistakes. We know all about that because he's a human. But notice the wonderful character of David play out before us. You know, this might be something that we just kind of read over in our daily Bible reading. But friends, notice that when we're seeing this play out in front of us, that we're seeing David growing as a godly person. We're seeing him growing in favor and admonition with the Lord. And this is really a good characteristic for any of us to have. You know, you think about Galatians 6 and verse number 10. What does it say? Do good unto all men, especially those of the household of faith. We have a responsibility to do good. We see David even here doing good. It's a wonderful, wonderful lesson.
You know, he grows, like you said, in favor with God, but also here with favor with men. That's right. What we're seeing. Like, you know, also Jesus did as well, grew in favor with God and with man. These men that were with him, the ones that went out to battle with him, they're listed over in 1 Chronicles 12, 19 to 22. Some of them are listed. But they're all spoken of as great, mighty men of valor, these 400, these who went out with him. You know, as you pointed out, the fairness of the things that he gave, there's something that also comes to mind with me. Remember Matthew chapter 6 when Jesus tells them, you know, don't give thought of what you're going to, you know, take. He said, you know, you're going to be supplied for by the people that you're going to. And I think we see that when we see this distribution of funds of the spoils, that which was over. He gives it to his fighters first, those who were there. But also, he goes back through and distributes it to the places where he and his men had gone on a regular basis, had these people, had these cities, had we seen there in the areas of Judah and the areas of Bethel and to those in Ramoth and all of those places, had they in the past times fed them, catered to, cared for them? Because the very last verse says, and to all the places where David himself and his men were accustomed to rove. You know, so maybe even that repayment, restitution to them and giving them their fair shake as well. Because, you know, when we look at, as say, missionary work, where Paul uses, you know, the letter of to the Corinthians, he uses the churches of Macedonia as an example. He said they had a fellowship in the work by what they had supplied. These cities as well may have had that fellowship in this ability to destroy or to overcome this enemy where these spoils even came from.
That's a good point. So we're seeing this, you know, just a few verses earlier, they were crazy upset at David, you know, very upset, maybe even at the point of wanting him dead. And now they're being blessed by him. And so, again, this, as Richard said, growing even with favor of man. And then as the book continues and even closes now, we see the death of God's anointed, Saul. And so as we left him being fed a moment ago by the witch of Endor, he comes now to the battlefront, and he faces these Philistines, of whom he was incredibly scared. Facing this heated battle now, where men are falling left and right, where they are being slain by the Philistines, knowing that God is not with him, knowing that the end of his days are right around the corner. And we see that Saul, his sons are killed. And what a... I can't even imagine, Richard, seeing, you know, your children killed in front of you. You know, you can't help but think back to 2 Kings 25, where you have the opportunity to see the Babylonians taking in the king of Judah, putting his sons to death, and then putting his eyes out. The last thing that this king would ever witness there in this 2 Kings account is the death of his own sons. That would be burned in his memory, even as he would live without sight in the days to come. Here, Saul sees his sons killed. Even Jonathan, the one that we love so very much through this particular account. And then Saul himself is injured. And knowing that it is quite possibly a fatal wound, he tells his armor bearer, he says, look, he says, I'm done. God's already pronounced my death, he said, and so that they don't come over here and abuse me and do some horrible things to me because I'm the king, go ahead and kill me. And his armor bearer said, I'm not going to do that. Now, I'm not going to be the one that kills the king. Certainly some great commentary could be spread on that as well. But notice that he goes ahead and he falls on his own sword. He takes his own life knowing that the Philistines would treat him miserably, torture him, even destroy that body of his, as you see they will. But Saul dies now, even by falling on his own sword after this fatal wound that he would receive in battle. And then his armor bearer would take his life as well, knowing that which the Philistines, what they were capable of. And as the chapter continues, verses 7 and beyond, we see that they take his head from off of his body. They hang him up for all to see. And what a horrible thing this is to see. You think about these people that warred in those particular days and the horrible things, the impaling of live people and setting them on fire for amusement, feeding people, even in the Roman Empire. Years later, you know, how people would be fed to lions. You think about what Daniel went through, you know, being thrown into a furnace. His friends were, you know. So much hatred is seen from one man to another in many places of the Scripture. And here the Philistines show their utter hate and, this horrible outcry even against the king, Saul. And so as you have the opportunity to see this death, the death of his sons, you see that which was predicted ultimately by God through Samuel, even here before the Witch of Endor. All this is coming to pass, and so God keeps his promises. That which he predicts always comes to pass. And then we have this kind of this tender moment, if you will, at the end of the chapter before the book, this book of history comes to a close. You see these guys of Jabesh-Gilead that come back with this great memorial to the king. They had received word of what had happened. They certainly understood that he had been hung out to display, certainly a great disrespect to the position of king, to the nation of Israel, all those things involved. And so when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard of that which the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall at Bethshan, came to Jabesh and burnt them there, and they took their bones and buried them under a tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. Notice the wonderful repayment that we're seeing here. You can go back and you can look at that which took place even back in chapter 11 of how Saul took care of them, how Saul would defend them, would do a great work for them. And now they have the opportunity to repay that good with yet another good. And so what a kind of a tender moment that we have. So much has happened, even in this particular first book, even in the last couple of chapters, so much has happened. But notice here the moment of tenderness as this chapter, even this book, comes to a close. And so, you know, we think of the opportunities that we have in this life, you know, when the visitations come and when the funerals come. What a privilege it is to go up and be able just to stand next to a spouse or to hug a child that has lost a parent or a sister or another relative, just to show a piece of gratitude. I saw a clip on the news not too long ago where I think it was Folds of Honor or something that deals with veterans. They retrieved a pickup truck that had been sold by the children's father before the children's father died. This organization went back and retrieved that truck, restored it, and delivered it to that oldest child. And he sat in the front seat and cried. What a moment of tenderness, a debt, you know, for a veteran that had passed on, you know, to show his family the gratitude that the nation has. Well, here we see this moment of tenderness, even with these people that come and take his beheaded body and his son's bodies down off this wall and give them a proper burial. What a great way for this particular book to end.
Chip, two things come to mind in this chapter, too, and that's at the beginning of it where, you know, mentioned that the armor bearer wouldn't kill him.
Mm.
You know, remember what David had said to Abishai, and that was the idea that who can kill God's anointed one and be guiltless? He wasn't going to do it. You know, I mean, there would be some guilt for killing God's anointed one. And then Saul, even that question, who can kill God's anointed one and be guiltless? Saul, you know, and Saul took that life.
Mm-hmm.
But as well, why the death of the sons? I think we see God's providence in allowing these deaths to carry out and take place here, because we're going to have a new anointed king.
Mm-hmm.
And for all of Israel to be united behind David, you know, there's not this heir to a throne idea of a son who would then step up into his father's footsteps, because not only has the king died, but all of the heirs have died, you know, as far as the sons in that lineage right there would die as well. So maybe that's even some providence where this chapter is going to close and a new chapter of history will begin with a clean slate following David.
The next 40 years. Well, we have had a wonderful study, at least in my mind, with you this morning. I hope you have enjoyed the time that we've had together. Love each one of you for being with us and sharing God's Word. And again, remember what Richard said. If you have the opportunity to tune in tonight, remember that our message will be broadcasting live tonight. So we want you to be a part of that one way or the other. So thank you for making the GospelRadioNetwork.org a part of your morning. And thank you for studying God's Word with us this morning. So we love each one of you, and we look forward to great broadcasting throughout the day. So don't go away. See you later. We love you.
Listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.